numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, that's YouTube TV, by the way, and of course, the DK Network. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, live from the barrage here at the D, Bar Canada. It's Gil Alexander once again with Kelly. And Kelly, good morning. First of all, how you doing, man?
Good morning. Good morning. Do we have a rodeo in town this weekend?
Oh, I don't know. Do we?
I don't know. Thought I saw some cowboys.
Is this the weekend where you throw on the cowboy hat and play some poker?
Okay. I wish I still
and try to act like you're the mark.
Well, I was really playing around with that idea during F1 weekend, because being in Caesar's Palace on Friday night before the race, I was like, seems like the weekend I should be playing poker. There's a lot of European rich money around here that just wants to be given away, Gil. Just wants to be given away.
There was at certain casinos. Certain casinos made out, that's for sure. It is a Friday. That means nothing but football on the show today. Matt Brown joins us momentarily to talk National Football League, all of his plays this week. Week number 13. I know I'm trying to bounce back. By the way, I had the under last night. That was done within a minute and a half. Oof. It felt like.
Yeah.
That was brutal. And then we'll talk college football. The Bear, Chris Felica from Fox Sports. Would you say he's never been more excited to be on the show before?
That was a vibe I picked up.
Do you know why that is, by the way? I can tell you why that is.
Yeah.
He wants to butt heads with me. He wants to butt heads with me about this FSU thing, so I can't wait for that. We'll get all his plays from championship week, 10 games of college football, see what his best bets are. Obviously, Dr. Bob will join us as well. Does Bob know that he's bumped 15 minutes today? Does he know that? Do we give him the memo?
He does, and I'm back on Bob duty. Because he very nicely asked for requested a reminder.
I'm glad you got that job.
So I
now.
Got that. This is off-air conversations happening.
Shedding
off-air.
Jobs is what I'm doing. And then Jason Weingarten from Under Cloud of Smoke. Yes, we got Jason as well on the show. So we are packed today. Let us talk about this football game last night first. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Seattle Seahawks 41-35. They do not cover. Seahawks backers get the money ATS. But Dallas gets the win. Ultimate bully that almost got bullied themselves last night, but they eke out the win. You and I have not talked about this at all to this moment. I will characterize this game, agree or disagree, of all the 41-35 type games in the history of the NFL, maybe the toughest watch of all of them, because the officials didn't just insert themselves into this game. They jammed themselves up into this game. This was brutal from a flags perspective. And here's that. And by the way, for those who would say, oh, well, maybe they were legit flags, here's how I know they were calling it too ticky-tack. There wasn't any flags thrown in the fourth quarter except for a delay of game, which is, you know, the most objective one you can find. So by definition, the teams aren't playing different all of a sudden in the fourth quarter. Usually we go through games. I just want to go through it based on the PIs.
Okay.
Just the PIs alone. And by the way, in the end, the total count was there were no punts in this game, zero punts in this football game, only the fifth time in the history of the NFL that there have been zero punts in a game. Mike McCarthy has been involved in 60% of those games, three of those five.
Are you serious?
Make of that what you will.
I caught the stat about it only being the fifth. He's been involved in three of them?
That is correct.
Wow.
Two with the Packers, one now with the Cowboys. 257 total accepted penalty yards in this game. That doesn't account for the ones that were thrown in. The refs were like, well, we'll pick this one up. Wasn't really. But Seattle, 10 for 130. Dallas, 9 for 127. Anyway, the...
Which they had to have done that three times or so, right?
Oh, for sure.
Throw a flag and pick it up?
Yeah, the record for accepted penalty yardage is like 372 or something like that. This would have gotten really close to it if they had, you know, kept those flags. But it was the nature of them. You know, it was a 7-3 game in favor of the Seahawks. And then Dallas got the ball back. 47-yard pass interference on Reek Woolen downfield on a play where I didn't think it was pass interference at all. And neither Al Michaels nor nor Herb Street. Thank you. Kirk Herb Street last night really made a big deal of that first one. Herb Street kind of, he was like, well, yeah, he kind of touched him. He didn't impede the progress of the receiver at all. So I thought that was like a very questionable flag that shouldn't have been thrown. Dallas went on matriculated 10-7 Dallas at that point. By the way, then after Myers missed a field goal, which Al Michaels described as, quote, slicing out of bounds, unquote. It's like
that was one of the weirdest field goals too. Because did you feel like it was going to be blocked like a whole way? I was like, this is about to be blocked. About he got it off, and then it was like, way off to the right.
Will Hill pointed out, he's like, what if it were inbounds? What would have happened if that kick were inbounds?
It's a rouge.
Okay, so later on, now it's 17-7 Dallas. We're still in the first half. We're in the second quarter. A Seattle Seahawks drive, 7 plays, 75 yards, not one but two PIs, which led to a Charbonnet one-yard score, a 40-yard PI, a 13-yard PI. Okay. Now we're 20-14 Dallas. Seattle has the ball, a 29-yard defensive pass interference to the one versus JSN. And that was the 21-20 halftime score, which at halftime, Richard Sherman was acting like the game was over and the Seahawks had won the game. He was so excited. But that, by the way, that was the ultimate back-to-back possessions by the Seahawks. Great job there. They ended up leading 28-20. Let's go later in the game. Now it's 35-27 Seattle. Another 35-yard PI on Woolen versus Lamb. That's the one where Herb Street was like, wait a minute, how are they calling this? Like, this, it didn't impede his progress at all. They're calling. So it's like one PI after other. These like turboed every drive into the end zone.
And now, the one thing I'll give credit to, like, CeeDee Lamb specifically for, it was he clearly picked up on this is how the game was going to be called.
Maybe he did.
Because it was every time he went after a ball, right away he's looking for a flag. Like, he got up looking for a flag.
But it's like, we didn't tune. You got to let them play.
It was horrible. It was terrible.
It was, again, 41-35 usually connotes this awesome football game that everybody's had fun watching. I'm like, oh my God. You waited 2 seconds, you're like, and there's another flag.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. And then the game ended, by the way, the final play of the game, the final play that mattered in the game, 41-35 Dallas, 1:43 to go. Seattle gets the ball. They get that pass to Lockett for 17, Fant for 8. So it's a second and two at midfield. The next two plays don't go anywhere. It's fourth and two at midfield. This is their final play. Geno under pressure from Micah Parsons. He throws it in the turf. Now, this is one of these plays where we've seen it a million times in football. What's supposed to happen here is the Seahawks offensive line is blocking everybody to the left, right? And their back is supposed to, like a slip screen in basketball, is supposed to sort of act like he's going to block the by design free defender, who in this case happens to be, wait for it, Micah Parsons, right? But it's not Kenneth Walker. It's not Zach Charbonnet. It's the much slower DJ Dallas, who is slow to get off, right? So as the Seahawks are blocking everybody to the left, he's supposed to come over to the right. Two problems. Three problems. One, he's slow to get off. Two, DeMarcus Lawrence has pushed the offensive line forward anyway, so there's traffic. And three, Micah Parsons runs a 4-3.
It was snap. One beat, and he was there in his face already. Like, he had no chance.
That game ended with such a whimper on that. I'm like, oh, God, really? Yes, that was by design. Should that have been the play they ran at that point? It was just ridiculous. 41-35 Cowboys. And so the question becomes, after all that, is there any takeaway at all from this game that you, any thought that you didn't already have beforehand?
I would say yes. First I'll give some credit. I thought Geno Smith looked really dang good last night after a few bad weeks. I mean, we've been kind of saying how much he's dropped off really this past month or so. I was really impressed with his play last night. And then you talk about zero punts. I mean, this Cowboys defense, you got shredded all night long. I mean, I felt like it was Seattle came in with a very obvious strategy to go after Bland time and time again, and that worked for the most part.
They toasted him in the first half. Yeah,
outside of one interception, it worked pretty much every single time. I think if you're walking away with the Cowboys, you're lucky to have a win here and your first win over a team with a winning record. But I think all the questions we had about the Cowboys from before this game of can they beat some quality opponents still remain.
Well, this is what I mean.
And the defense, I've got even this is one of your worst performances of the year.
This is what I mean, by the way. This is from Ari Mayrov at My Sports Update. He said Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott in his last seven games. Look at that. 70% completion percentage. 2,000 plus yards, 2,100 plus yards thrown. This is over a seven-game span now. 23 touches against two picks and a 6-1 record. You're in denial if you don't think he's an MVP candidate. Oh, he's a candidate,
he's
all right.
He's been awesome. And he's been awesome. But this is so, like, after that game, right? Like, you have to, right now you're in a situation where Dallas has to keep doing this offensively week after week.
So this is my whole thing is, the reason I asked that question is because I don't think we learned anything, not learned. I don't think our opinions of these two teams is markedly different than it was before this game. Yes, you're right about Geno looked a little better, but Seattle still ends up being a fringe playoff team at best in a not that crowded NFC, quite frankly. Yep. Like, they're a good team, but they're not a very good team, I don't think. Maybe they're somewhere in that pocket. And Dallas is exactly what we think they are. They're kind of a bully. This is, you're right, this is the first, this is probably their best win of the season, I guess. I'd have to go back and look.
Like, I still think, like, their best game was their loss against the Eagles.
That was their best game. Right, they should have won that game. That was clearly their best game to me. But this is, if they're playing a team of any repute, it's kind of nip and tuck.
Yeah.
You can't get there. But the point about Dak as an MVP candidate, that is certainly valid. He's in that mix.
Totally. And the offense, yes. The offense is firing as well as it really has all season. So I can't really take away much from that.
Dak down to plus 475 in the MVP market. That only hurts Mahomes and Jackson shorter over at DraftKings. So there you go. Updated. Tua right behind him. And then Brock Purdy, who will actually win this award, ladies and gentlemen. I stand by that. We'll come back. Matt Brown joins us, talk football, all his picks in the NFL Week 13. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we got to take a break, talk about Zyn nicotine pouches. We're always debating what a team needs to do to get to number one, but Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store, online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Skill Alexander, we get tweets at Beatty the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Tim Thompson at Four Dog Golfer Dad. Curious about betting and stat corrections. The Pollard touchdown last night could perhaps be switched to a reception. Another Dak touchdown, Dak over 300 yards. I think Pollard currently on his over-under number, reception number, he's right on the number right now. Stat corrects don't happen until Wednesday. So that's an interesting thing. There's a bunch of props that could be determined by that if there is a correction or not. Kevin Ryan, he says, Gil, Thursday Night Football was an exciting game, but marred by the officiating. The ticky-tack flags, one after the other, were excruciating. The league needs to use this tape on what is not a penalty enough already. And then he tweets right back and he goes, I sent that right before your opening monologue. Exactly what you said.
You know what's really tough about a game like that, too, is it's the Amazon factor, right? It is the Amazon where you got to get out of the whole app, like where there's so many pauses in action because of the flags, and timeouts and stuff. And you want to be able to switch around. But then I know if I exit the app, I got to get back into it. And it's a whole thing.
Do you ever do the recap before,
yes,
you get that?
Yeah, you accidentally hit that. Yeah. Yeah. What am I watching? Yeah.
A Joe named Jim thinking last night at how totally bad the NFC is after Philly, San Francisco, and Dallas. The Giants are a Jets game debacle / collapse and an untimed play at Buffalo away from being 6-6 and in a legit NFC playoff mix with Tommy Cutlets at the helm.
Well, reminder, the Carolina Panthers not eliminated from hosting a home playoff game.
That's exactly what I was going to go to. That is still the best stat. The Carolina Panthers could still host a home playoff game, winning that division. Nate King, thoughts on the three consecutive scores prop in the Big Ten title game? Oh, that's good. I didn't know they had one for it. We see this usually during the Super Bowl, where we always talk about how this is the prop that usually flummoxes bettors the most, because the average bettor is like, oh, three scores in a row. It's the Super Bowl. These two teams are great. This never happens. How is it that the no is plus money like this? It always happens. And in the Big Ten title game with Michigan going up against Iowa, just tell me what the juice is on that. because that would determine my answer. But yes, Michigan ought to score three times in a row in that game for sure. New Jersey, New York, from Gil this morning, quote, of the five games in NFL history to not have a punt, Mike McCarthy has been involved in three of them. That's objectively weird, and yet I entirely believe it. Respect the process. Bland to get an interception, plus 247. Cash that. Nice job. Respect the process. And from this one, last one here. Oh, just love for the Megapod yesterday. We had Ace back on the show. So thank you very much for tuning in to the Beating the Book Megapod. The man upon whom that podcast was partially built, upon his shoulders. So we were lucky to have him back yesterday. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Matt Brown joins us, ladies and gentlemen, from The Handle here, weekends on the network, which he does with Mike Somich. Also has a contest element to it with Derek,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then, of course, his podcast, All Angles. How about that part of it? Like, do you enjoy, I mean, the Survivor's now down to 80 entries.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing how massive, I mean, obviously $9.267 million to begin with is massive, but just the fact that that the pot there is so big by comparison to what Millions gets in first place, right? That guy, do you know, you're, I guess because you're doing this, you're familiar with the gentleman who mistakenly clicked
yes. yeah.
Green Bay. That might be, I know Paulie's in this too, so I don't want to like pick favorites and stuff, but his story is so amazing. It's hard not to root for that guy.
Yeah, it was so it came through like
mom
right before,
died, right?
It came through right before we were going on air. Like the tweet had hit, and then so Derek's like reading it in real time, and he just like invites the guy to Vegas. He's like, come to Vegas. He's like, I'll put you up. Like, I just want to meet you.
That's awesome.
And whatever. And all, he didn't know any of the. This was literally just like because he had just seen. He goes, I want to be next to someone that lucky, and you know whatever, God. And all, you know all the things like that.
That's
like,
cause, great.
Yeah, because he's just like, you know, I mean, this it's incredible too because again, he has a proxy.
Right.
So, like, it was because he just happened to be in town, and it was the one time he was putting in his own pick.
That was, when Gil was first telling the story to me, that was the part I didn't get. Like, I'm like, what do you mean? If he's got a proxy, what is he clicking? And then I'm like, oh, he happened to be there. He
happened to be in town.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then thought he was out.
Right.
Yeah, he thought he was out. And then so, like, just it's like not even making a pick until he gets, like, a call. It's like, hey, dude, we need your pick.
Imagine getting that call. And having to completely rejigger your brain into, I have to think of another game real quick. And he immediately said Tennessee, which, I mean, he also could have gotten out there too, right? He could have easily picked somebody else, but he was like, no, Tennessee, I'm in. So you have to process that and then figure out the next team to play.
Yeah, such a great story. Listen. It just kind of goes along. You got to get lucky along the way, some way, shape, or form. Anyway,
multiple times.
Yes. Yeah.
You are trying to hit a 20 team money line parlay
that you can't use the same
team. And you're not allowed to use the same team twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not getting through that.
Yeah.
Unless you're the one or two or three lucky people
It's great because I mean you look and it's like yes, there's different forms of luck and his just happened to be. I clicked the wrong team, you know? I mean, it is what it is.
All right, back to your picks. You're closing out a teaser here with the Jags?
Yeah, so the only good thing that happened from the podcast yesterday, if you listened, is I said, get on the Cowboys on a teaser. Like, never doubt, right? You know, obviously. But, yes. Yeah, so the Cowboys teaser leg does get home. So closing that out with the Jags. And I really, really, really like the Jags this week. If you look, this is a Cincinnati team with Browning. I understand T. Higgins is going to be back. I get all that. But, like, I just don't know how much that really makes this team that much better with Browning at quarterback. Now, I think that there are flashes of Browning being okay. And if this was a team that I didn't have as much respect for as I do the Jags, maybe I wouldn't be as bullish on this as I am. But I actually really like the Jags. And I think what we've seen from the Jags here over the last few weeks is more indicative of kind of what I thought the Jags would be heading into this season. And it's hard to say that it's like predicated on Zay Flowers being out on the field, but like you look and or Zay Jones but you look and it's like one of those things where he opens so much up for these other receivers, and you actually hear Trevor Lawrence talk about it where he says like, yeah, it's like when we have all the guys out there, it really opens it up for everyone. That's why we see Calvin Ridley is like had these nice games the last couple of weeks because all the guys are back out there again. And so they have to pay a little bit more attention to these other people. And so Calvin Ridley's found himself open a little bit more. Honestly, I think Trevor Lawrence is kind of, again, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is ever going to be the guy that we thought maybe coming out of college, but I do think that he is I mean, legitimately, considering the quarterback play we have in the NFL right now, he's legitimately like a top eight guy, right? I mean, like you're probably taking him in your draft like somewhere in the top eight, considering how bad the quarterback play is in the NFL. And this defense is a top 12 unit. And with you put all of those pieces together, I think it equals a pretty good win here. And again, 8.5, probably not in love with laying that specifically, but definitely from a teaser leg standpoint. Yeah,
So I played that same teaser, Cowboys and Jags, early way. I do have a note I've had it written down in my notes all week of, you know, maybe tie another team in here with the Jags, because I like the Jags leg better than I even like the Dallas leg. Is there any other side you'd consider that with, Matt?
You could flip just it. Well, the good thing is about this is a Monday game, so you could flip it in next week, which would be
good point.
Like, so that's
because it is not a Wong heavy week.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So one thing that is pretty good about that, I mean, like you're going to get like next week, you get like the Ravens against the Rams, Ravens at home, right? Ravens. So like that's going to be 7.5, so, you know, 8, something like that. So you could definitely do.
Hey.
Oh, sorry. That's a guess.
It's a guess. I am the most annoying person with this stuff.
Listen, it's a guess. It's a guess for me.
Well, it will change, that's for sure.
Yeah.
The other thing, just staring at this total, like this is, I mean, I know the three of us have done this on plenty of primetime action nights and games. But you could tease this total down too, I guess. I mean, like you are talking in the
sharp
low
guard
30s.
Taken away.
Yeah, exactly. Like low 30s, 2.5 in the low 30s. Like, yeah, I think that's something I could get home Monday night.
The other thing to monitor here, and this does not change my handicap on the game whatsoever. But from a prop standpoint, if you guys want to like see if anything gets posted a little bit early. So ATN has missed the last couple of days with a chest injury, and it's gone D'Ernest Johnson and not Tank Bigsby with them for the last couple of weeks. So D'Ernest,
I was seriously waiting for it too.
D'Ernest Johnson from your Atlanta studios.
He's moved in that number two role. There, I know that they started the season thinking that it was going to be Tank Bigsby. For whatever reason, he just hasn't panned out. A couple of bad drops for him. A couple of tipped off the fingertips, turned in interceptions. So they've pretty much gone to D'Ernest Johnson as their number two guy, which then would turn him into the number one guy if ATN's not able to go. And so I think, too, with this game, as much as I like the Jags, I think he ends up getting a decent amount of run in this game, specifically kind of like icing things out as well. So I'm going to be pretty interested in what his numbers come out at if ATN's not able to go.
Okay. Matt's got two more plays, two more sides. Want to get his thoughts on MVP as well. One of his sides I'm fascinated by. We'll get his MVP thoughts. Also his thoughts on Coach of the Year, where he stands on that. Week 13 in the National Football League. Oh, and he's an LSU guy. Might as well ask him about the Heisman while we're at it. Coming back with Matt Brown. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. From Bar Canada at the D, it's Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin on a numbers game. Still to come this hour, Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. Talking about all his bets this weekend, gambling porn. Plus, the great Dr. Bob on what he's playing this week. Pro, college, we don't know what he's going to tell us. We don't have any idea. We'll find out, though, momentarily. Usually we do one segment with the Bear, Chris Felica from Fox Sports and the Bear Bets podcast, but he is feisty this morning, so we're going to do more than one with him. Chris Felica joins us now. How you doing, sir?
I'm well. How are you? I'm not necessarily feisty.
Oh, okay. I thought you're feisty.
I'm excited. I wouldn't say I'm feisty. I think you're the feisty one.
I'm not feisty. You're feisty. That's a good put down right there. What hotel? You're obviously, I would imagine that's a hotel that you're in right now. Is that correct?
Yes, it is a lovely Conrad Hotel in Indianapolis. I'm here for the Michigan Iowa Big Ten Championship game. I have a nice little shrimp cocktail fest at St. Elmo tonight. So, good way to end the pre-bowl season here with my first year with Fox.
Ah, you love St. Elmo. I've heard you talk about it before.
I do.
Okay, so before we get into your thoughts on the game that you guys will be covering and the entire championship week landscape, let us talk about something that you are somewhat passionate about. I think that's a fair analysis, which is you really are in the camp I don't want to mischaracterize it, but you, I think you lean to the camp of the four best teams ought to be there, and there should be a scenario where FSU with a win does not get it. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I think there are quite a number of people out there who feel that way. And look, Boo Corrigan has said it all along. He's like, the committee is tasked with putting the best four teams in the playoff. There's nothing it says deserving. Now, we all know in the past they have erred on the side of putting like the teams that have had kind of the best season and deserve to get there. And also, and he brought it up again, in their bylaws, criteria, whatever you want to call them, it specifically indicates player availability is something that it should come into play. And if you use that combination of best and player availability, like, I don't know how anybody could sit there and say that this Florida State team with Rodemaker, a quarterback, is one of the best four teams in the country. People are it's at least right now, people are trying to make the correlation between what Ohio State did in 2013 or 2014 with Cardale Jones. We'll see if Florida State goes out Saturday night with Rodemaker and that team that they have and beats Louisville 59-0 like Ohio State did over Wisconsin. Sure. Then they proved it on the field. But I think there was this thing also, even with Jordan Travis, like there were a school of thought that they're really not, I mean, they didn't power rate very highly. I mean, they've won all their games and credit to them for doing that. I just don't think they're one of the best four teams. Now, do I think the committee will kind of take the humane way out and say, okay, I think there is a subliminal human element of this where they will say, can we really leave a team that's 13-0 and won the ACC out? Probably not. But remember, ACC is the weakest Power 5 league. They're the weakest champ. And really, the resume of Florida State, the resume of Florida State is what they did last week against Florida and what they do tomorrow against Louisville, because anything that they did with Jordan Travis really shouldn't be accounted for, because that's not the team that they're going to take into the playoff. And I was talking with Chris Andrews about like projected lines, and you're looking at a 15-point spread potentially against Georgia, a 12-point spread potentially against Michigan. And I get back to deserving. Deserving has gotten us Alabama, Michigan State, Alabama, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, LSU, like Notre Dame, Alabama. That's what deserving has gotten us. Awful semifinal game. So here's an opportunity for the committee to kind of use their criteria and say, hey, you know what? If we were truly looking for the best four, maybe Florida State isn't one of them. But I do think, like I said, I do think that they ultimately will put them in.
Yeah. Two things. One, you're an awful human being for having this opinion. Two,
I'm a lawful human being for a lot of
it. As I've said all week, I totally understand both sides of the argument. I happen to lean, though, to the, because you're right about, look, those of us who bet, we know what the lines are going to be. We know what's happened in these lopsided semis. It ain't good television. It's not great football. No. But you can't tell kids who have shown up for a college football season with a Power 5 schedule and they've beaten everybody you've placed in front of them. And then, yes, their quarterback does go down, but there is precedent, right, with Cardale Jones. And I said, you know, hypothetically, if this happened to Alabama, would they knock them out? No. And I get what you're saying about power ratings. You just can't tell these kids they can't be in it. You just can't. And as you said, it's not going to happen. They're going to be in if they win.
Yeah, I think ultimately that will be the way it shakes down. Now, Louisville can do the committee in Texas and whomever else a favor. They can get the win on Saturday night. We'll see if that numbers come down some more. There's some questions about Rodemaker's availability, and I think he's still going to play. But the thing with Florida, like the third string kid Glenn, he broke his finger I think earlier in the year, and that's the only reason he's not number two right now. So. And the people that I've been talking to, like even if Rodemaker isn't able to play or he doesn't pass concussion or whatever the situation is, I don't think they view that as a downgrade if the freshman does have to come in and play.
Okay, let's start with the Pac-12 title game tonight here in Vegas, where Oregon is now, I mean, they've gotten a 10. hosting, well, actually not hosting, but playing Washington for the Pac-12 championship. Obviously, UW is undefeated. They almost, you know, the disrespect being, they're an undefeated team that's in the situation where they have to win or they're out. 9.5 is the consensus number. Do you feel that this number is correct? Do you think Penix is hurt? And do you think Oregon will get to a place in this game where they play it, as Bud Elliott said yesterday on the show from 24/7 Sports, in a way that will try to hoist Nix to the Heisman?
Yes, I do. I totally agree with Bud on that. And I think the number is right just based on the trajectory of those teams since the Washington win in Seattle over Oregon. Earlier, I think you and I and other, a bunch of people have talked about it. Like, we felt coming out of that game that if they played again, I would happily lay a touchdown with Oregon in that game. And yeah. Rumor about Penix's ribs being injured, other things. He clearly has not looked right. That they've been begging to get beat the last couple of weeks. And I do think there'll be an Oregon situation here where they do try and put up big numbers for Bo Nix. And I know Jeff Schwartz, so I was talking about on the podcast yesterday that he thinks Bo Nix being in the running game is going to be a big part of the offense in this game, something that they really haven't shown much of this year. But with Nix and Bucky Irving and Tez Johnson, I think their offense is going to put up a bunch of points. And I just don't know if UW, with the way Penix has been playing, if they're going to be able to come back. Like it's obvious to everybody something's going on. I mean, they got like guys standing next to him, making sure people don't bump into him. So clearly something up, and it's a shame that they have an injury as well at the position for their biggest game of the year. They've had a great year, but I do like, if I did have to, I don't want to have to lay 9.5 here. I got enough liability and futures on Oregon right now where I don't need to play this game. I mean, I actually took Washington like 10 days ago in the look ahead at +7 because I didn't think the number would get higher than that. And clearly I was wrong with my forecast of the line. So I'm in a good position here with this game, but I'm not going to play it. If I didn't have a position, I probably would lay the 9.5.
Anything in the other game tonight, Conference USA Championship, Liberty and New Mexico State, anything in that game?
Liberty's covered these numbers all year. I've faded Liberty a couple of times and I've been on the wrong side of that. I guess I would still lean towards maybe taking New Mexico State. This is a team that went to Jordan-Hare a couple of weeks ago and dominated Auburn. Why can't they go to Liberty and hang around and be close? I haven't played it, but if you're just looking for a late night fix to watch a game with a little action, I'd take Jerry Kill and the boys there plus the 11. That's a lot of points.
All right, what's your single favorite play tomorrow?
I do like UNLV plus the points in that game. I think the Rebels all year long have been the best team in that league. And I think there's kind of a bad mouthing going on right now that San Jose State beat them last week. San Jose State should be in the game. UNLV shouldn't. This isn't a great Boise team. Obviously, they've responded since Andy Avalos was fired, and they've been much better since then. But I think over the course of the year, UNLV has been better. I think the defense with Barry Odom, I think they'll do a good enough job against that Boise State running game. And I think they're going to win that game. It's been a very special season for Odom and that bunch. And I think as a college football fan, I think it'd be a great story. And I hope they do win. But I do like them tomorrow in that Mountain West game.
The game that you're covering, the Michigan-Iowa Big Ten Championship, this is so interesting. There's so many ways to parse this in terms of, you know, what could be Iowa's ineptitude in this game. Is there a specific way you're betting this game, even if not the side or total?
I bet the total. I grabbed it under 35.5. And I just don't think it's going to be very plausible to see Iowa score more than 7 points at most. And maybe they get a turnover. Maybe they get a big return. Maybe they PI their way down the field somehow with the worst passing offense in the country. But I also don't know, on the other hand, like how much, maybe we see a Michigan game plan, kind of like what they did against Penn State, running the ball basically every play in the second half, or that drive last week against Ohio State where they relied on the running game. Like, I could see this being like a 27-7 type of game, maybe 30-30, that's something like that. I did actually bet Michigan at the open At 21.5, assuming it was going to go up. It hasn't gone up a ton. So I do have a Michigan 21.5 that I still do feel good about. But I think this is a dead hunter game.
Chris Velika, kind enough to join us for a second segment, the Bear Bets Pod, pro and college football versions out now. College on Thursday, pros on Fridays. We'll get more thoughts from him on these other championship week games and the scenario that would be the hardest for the committee to sift through. What does he think that would be and how would he vote on it? That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.